Good morning and welcome to First Things First. I'm a very hydrated Jenna Wolf. That right there is Chris Carter, the Hall of Famer. This is Nick Wright. We got ourselves some football to talk about today. Finally, football is back. Friday is here. Things are good. We'll talk some Kyler Murray in just a second. Oh. But first, Jags and Ravens and rookie quarterback Gardner Minshew getting absolutely annihilated by Baltimore linebacker Kenny Young.
Fumbled snap put him in a really bad spot here. They didn't throw the flag on this, and I think that was right not to. I don't think the defender was leading with his helmet, even though the quarterback's helmet
got knocked off.
Yeah,
the bad snap. Dropped the snap, but the hot was to the right. He misread it. That's the reason why he got hit in his face.
Falcons undrafted rookie Preston Williams with an unbelievable one-handed over-the-shoulder catch here.
He made another catch that was inside the five-yard line early third quarter that was excellent. Made me read up a little bit on him. He has been the star of Dolphins camp, undrafted free agent with a great chance of making that team, potentially making an impact for that team. He had a great day.
Great throw, even better catch.
Yeah, Rosen and he had a good connection yesterday.
Cardinals and Chargers, Trent Sherfield making the over-the-shoulder grab here, able to keep both feet in, and that's a touchdown.
We saw a lot of good throwing and catching last night. This was a special catch, especially his footwork here. Quarterback puts it in the only spot where the DB is not going to be able to get it. Nice fade on the ball over your outside eye, little toe tap.
It's a heck of a throw by Brett Hundley. That's a nice play by
him.
Former Packer Brett Hundley. Exactly right, Jenna.
Sticking with the Cardinals now, but on to the number one overall pick, Kyler Murray, and his first live game action. If he was nervous, he hit it well. Definitely an efficient night, working out of the shotgun the whole time. Went 6 of 7, 44 yards in 10 plays. His night was done after that. After getting that first preseason game out of the way, Kyler said it was a dream come true to play last night.
I think, you know, it's natural as rookies just to, you know, kind of have expectations, you know, how is it going to be, you know, overthinking stuff like that. But for me, I was just going out there being myself, like always, you know, trusting my abilities, trust what coach calls, and just trying to go out there and execute what he calls. So it was fun.
It's great that that was his takeaway, that it was fun. He seemed really relaxed, at least at the presser up there. What was your first impression of Kyler Murray last night,
Steve? A lot of the formation, a lot of the plays we're very, very familiar with. They have changed either their offense as far as what they're presenting and what they're going to compared to what Cliff and what Kyler is used to run in college. And you can see from Baker Mayfield, one thing that Cleveland did that really gave Baker an advantage, they put in some Lincoln Riley things from college. This, though, to me, because I wanted to see, what is the air raid offense? Who is Cliff Kingsbury as a coach? What they're going to try to do? But they put him in a good situation. They got the ball out of his hand very, very quick. The offensive line weren't able to take advantage of because they got some huge question marks there. So 1-2-3 in the gun. I think it's important people know that he's going to be more effectively playing in the gun at that height. Not 100%, but it's going to be in the 90% as far as him being in shotgun. They ran one RPO where he had the option to either give it to the back, throw the swing, or run it. He was utilizing his feet only to be able to throw the ball. He should have had a perfect night, but wide receiver stepped out of bounds. So an illegal touch on the incompletion. Not his fault, but you can see from the film, he can flat sling it. 1-2-3 out, deep out to the left. 1-2-3, my number one's not there. He gets down to the back. And also the play calling was very understandable for a rookie quarterback. Let's get him successful, quick. Let's run some screen passes, get him some completions, because their first possession, he was backed up to the goal line, 2-yard line. That's the hardest way to start an offensive series. They were still aggressive enough, believed in him enough. He drove them down, got a couple first downs, and then they were turned it over on downs, and that was the night. But for the first pick in the draft, I thought he did a good job. I thought Cliff Kingsbury did a good job of scheming to get him through the number of plays that he was going to play.
You keyed on what I thought was the most important part of it, was his first touch in an NFL game, albeit a preseason game, is inside his own 5-yard line. And they have him in the shotgun, and he ends up, you talked yesterday about how one of the tougher things, college to pro for a lot of different reasons, but is the narrower hash marks. He's right in the middle of the field, and they trust him to throw a deep out to the sideline to get him a breathing room and a first down, and that arm strength was right there.
Yeah. When I say the hash marks, I'm only talking about for the app, for the coaches and the scheme. I'm not talking about the guys who can throw. All right. In college, the guys who can't throw, you're able to exploit them because they're not going to throw to the field. So there's not an advantage or disadvantage for him because of his skill, but based on the offense and how they call plays.
So hash marks notwithstanding, that is, this is a big time NFL throw. The deep out to the sideline is a big time NFL throw, and so his first throw was a tough one, and then you saw an easy pass for a first down on a second one. His third pass, he rolls out to the right and he finds someone. You mentioned the RPO, where he ends up throwing it almost horizontally to Larry Fitzgerald.
Yes.
I don't know if it was the right decision or not, but it was an accurate pass.
It was the right decision because you don't want him running. In the game, you want him to be the triple threat, press the defense. In this time, you want him to get it to Fitzy. That's the part that I really enjoyed about that play.
Right, because a preseason game, you don't want your quarterback to take any hits if possible. And you mentioned the reason this drive didn't end in points was because they got the penalty on the one play because the receiver stepped out of bounds, and then Kyler got hit on a sack that knocked him out of field goal range. But he did everything you'd want him to do. He showed some escapability, but the escapability led to him throwing the ball, not trying to get yards with his feet. He had easy reads and some difficult throws. Like, as much as you can learn from one drive in one preseason game, Kyler Murray checked all the boxes you'd want to see.
And I asked you this morning, between the rookies that started yesterday, Daniel Jones and Dwayne Haskins and Kyler, who was the most impressive? And right away you said Kyler Murray. What else do you want to see from him this preseason?
Well, you want him to keep growing. He's going to make some bad mistakes. But I like the fact of how they started. The foundation of this offense, if it is get the ball out of his hand, it's got a chance to be successful. One of the things about these offenses, that being Steve Spurrier, when he tried to bring his offense into the NFL, he didn't have flexibility. He was like, it's going to be my way. This is the scheme. There's not going to be any changes. Chip Kelly, he tried to run it that way. There's not going to be any changes, and both of them failed. If he has some flexibility, adopts NFL concepts, because you're going against NFL talent, NFL elite talent that can go sideline to sideline, it gives Kyler the best chance to be successful.
And last year, this was the worst offensive line in football. I understand they brought in some new people, so it won't be the same offensive line. But one of the reasons this offense was so bad last year was you had a terrible offensive line plus a quarterback that couldn't move around. Kyler again reminded you yesterday that even if the offensive line breaks down a bit, he can buy you a little extra time while keeping his eyes upfield to try to make productive plays. That's going to be important because even if the offensive line improves greatly, this isn't going to be a good offensive line this season. And so Kyler's going to have to be able to move around to keep himself upright.
All right, time for stories to start your morning. Let's stick with the Browns. They dealt away Duke Johnson to the Texans for a conditional pick. See, just how much does having a good pass-catching running back help Deshaun Watson?
Oh, it would help him. Give him another threat. Duke's a great runner of the football. I think he's underrated. Great might be pushing it just a little bit. But as a role player, if I look at all the role players, all the backup backs, he stands out amongst them as being one of the best in the league. Can catch the ball out of the backfield, is a veteran, was very disappointed. Kareem Hunt came there, so he didn't really have a fit in Cleveland. I'm glad they traded him because he was not happy in just being there in camp. Move him on down the road, let his career try to flourish there with the Texans. They need his pass-catching ability coming out of the backfield.
And the Texans have been trying to find a running back since Arian Foster left. I mean, they drafted Alfred Blue. They kept running him for 3.5 yards a carry. They gave Lamar Miller at the time a big free agent deal. He's still the starting running back, but he is not. He's averaging 950 yards and 4 touchdowns a season in 3 seasons with them. They need a difference maker in the backfield. He is elite at catching the football out of the backfield,
yes.
At least as far as number of overall catches should help.
All right, last night Lamar Jackson made his preseason debut, completed 4 of his 6 passes, threw a touchdown to Willie Snead. Lamar, by the way, did not attempt a single run. Nick, what'd you make of his performance?
I thought the first play of the game was really good, where they use a little play-action rollout, use his threat to run to scheme a receiver open. Now, we saw this play right here. I think he's throwing to the underneath guy and sails it on him and ends up getting a completion. But that he didn't run, that he stayed in the pocket as much as he could and tried to make plays with his arm, that's what this preseason should be about, him working on his throwing. We know he can run the football.
Continue to work on his fundamentals. Glad to see him not running. Once we get in the regular season, it'll be a nice mix. The pass down the sideline, he did overthrow it because he's not overly tall. And when he gets rushed, he drops his arm down, which makes the ball sail. Fortunate for them, they had a receiver in the outside lane that was able to haul it in. But nice progression for a second-year quarterback.
On to the Patriots now. Tom Brady sat this one out against the Lions, but fourth-round pick Jared Stidham said, "Don't worry, Tom, I got you." Stidham completed 14 of 24 pass attempts for 179 yards and a touchdown. And he's reportedly been turning some heads during training camp. See, any chance the Patriots got another steal with Stidham?
Well, this is the thing about the Patriots. They are trying to groom Tom Brady's quarterback. Now, to me, is he in practice, or was he like a guy going to be like a Josh Rosen type guy? So with me, with Belichick, it's still on the board. You're hearing great things about him. He's got good anticipation, doesn't have elite height, doesn't have elite size, doesn't have elite arm strength. But you can see he understands the concepts of what they're trying to do. And let's not forget, there's no team not coached better. Sometimes, because if it's not a defensive player, we don't give credit to the offensive coach in New England. They got a hell of a staff. They teach football the right way. So to be in that think tank every day, good for him, but he has been impressive in the last couple weeks and in his first preseason game.
And he's going to get a ton of opportunities this preseason.
He should.
Brady doesn't need – I mean, Brady's this year 20. It's his 20th preseason. Hoyer is as veteran of a backup as you get. So he's going to get a surplus of opportunities to improve during the preseason. And should be noted, he wasn't a seventh-round pick. They spent a fourth-round pick on him. So that is a valuable pick where you probably could have gotten a contributor at a different position. So they must have seen something in Stidham to where they want to see what he can turn into. Nice debut.
Washington quarterback Dwayne Haskins had a bit of an up-and-down NFL debut last night, taking on the Browns. He went 8 of 14 for 117 passing yards. He did throw two interceptions. He was also sacked twice as he welcomed to the NFL. Yes, he's a rookie, but also, yes, he's competing for that starting job. Here's Haskins after the game.
Football's all about adversity, so just trying to figure out how to, you know, get better. Had a second drive coming. Had the second half came out. First drive got some points, so that was good. And, you know, just trying to just figure it out.
There were moments that he looked very good. Obviously, there's a couple throws there that he wished he had back. A couple things with the protections. We got to get cleaned up. But first start in the NFL, first opportunity to play, you know, it's not going to go perfectly.
Ways to go. I feel like I got a lot of work to put in, but I'm excited for my potential and I'm keep getting better.
All right, they all said the right things. Nick, what did you take away from Haskins' performance?
I think it's worthwhile, if you can, to go to NFL.com and watch the cut-up of every throw he made yesterday, because I don't think the stat sheet did him justice. I watched online today every throw from all the young quarterbacks from preseason game one. And Haskins, without any question, was asked to make the most difficult throws. He had the fewest easy open reads. I don't know if that was by design or if that's just because of what the Browns were able to do defensively. I thought his first throw of the game inside his own 10, a play-action rollout where he goes for 25 yards, was a really good throw. He made another really good throw up the sideline that the receiver ended up fumbling, and it ended that drive. Now, the two interceptions were bad. One was particularly bad, the one into double coverage that Greedy Williams got. But I thought he was better than the stat line showed. I thought he had some really solid throws. This one was obviously not one of them, where he rushes the wheel route. But I don't think Haskins should be terribly discouraged by what happened yesterday, because there were moments where you saw him make some of the better throws any of the young guys made last night.
Yeah, it's easy to explain the interception. The wheel route, he had a running back on a linebacker. He thought he was going to be able to loft it over the linebacker's head. But at this level, until you see it in the game, you don't realize guys can anticipate, linebackers can catch. And the defender for Cleveland, he's able to catch it and return it for a touchdown. But if he puts a little more air on it, the other throw down the seam, his fundamentals, he stepped into his throw, but the ball sailed on him. So it's not in the double coverage. You're playing two-man. All right, they're playing a zone coverage. Greedy's just back there. He's not guarding that guy. He's guarding the guy outside. So those are things that are very, very correctable. But also, as the coach mentioned, they got to clean up their pass protection. If you start getting guys in your face, your ball starts sailing, you start misreading it. So this is all part of it. I don't mind guys throwing interceptions if you can explain the reason why and be able to correct them. But if you're trying to be a starter in this league, You can't turn the football over. The thing I said yesterday, you guys said, what do you want to see? I just want to see the mechanics. I want to see in and out of the huddle. I want to see a couple throws. Don't turn the ball over. Don't fumble. Don't give the defense an opportunity, because the team, it's hard for the team, and this is not just Haskins, this is every quarterback. It's hard for a team to have confidence in a quarterback that puts the defense back onto the field. It's hard to like a guy. It's hard to follow a guy. So you can't turn the football over is what you have to be able to take from these preseason games.
Is it on the board that Dwayne Haskins can start, can beat out Case Keenum for that?
Oh, I don't think he's going to start week one. I think I would be shocked if he doesn't start at some point this season. In modern NFL, you draft a quarterback in the first round, they start that year. And I mean, it's not like he's behind an entrenched starter in Keenum or Colt McCoy. You mentioned the pass protection. He was under constant duress, and it came out yesterday, Trent Williams doesn't ever want to play for Washington again. It's no longer about wanting a new contract, reportedly. It's that he wants a trade. That's an all-pro left tackle that he is ostensibly not going to have the benefit of playing behind. Now, Cleveland's got a good front, and I know there were some backups in there by the time Haskins was playing, but he was constantly running for his life, took one big shot in the game. That didn't help him out either.
Jenna, this is what I know. Every team, Case and Colt, have been on since they've been in the NFL. The team been looking for a starter. So Haskins should be starting. If he doesn't turn the ball over, he should be starting immediately, because neither one of those guys are your starter. When you start the season with one of those guys, you know you're not making the playoffs. You know you're going to be drafted in the top 10. That's what typically has happened when those guys have been starters.
All right, let's move on to the Giants now. They debuted their sixth overall pick, quarterback Daniel Jones, last night, and at least for a night, Jones put his doubters on notice, going a perfect 5 of 5, 67 yards, including a 12-yard touchdown pass to Benny Fowler. But head coach Pat Shurmur says those wanting Jones to start need to relax just a little bit.
I think slow your roll. I mean, this is just his first go-round, you know, and I think he did a good job. As I mentioned all along, he's done nothing to disappoint us, and certainly when you take the team down the field and score a touchdown, it's a good start, something good to build on. And we got a lot of time left before we start playing games, and nothing at this point has changed.
Trying to do my job, and you know, with everyone else doing their job, it works. We score points, so I don't know how that's seen outside of the locker room, but it felt good to know.
See, what'd you make of Daniel Jones last night?
Well, he's had a good training camp, and then you could see it transferred over to the game. NFL offenses, they're not going to overwhelm him, because being with Cutcliffe, the coach at Duke, that's what he runs. He's taught Peyton Manning. He's taught Eli Manning. He's a quarterback coach. Like, he's an offensive guru. So he is way up as far as a football IQ approaching the NFL. So that's a huge advantage. He's having a good camp. And Pat Shurmur, he did. He put him in some things. He was very, very comfortable. But he kept the starting offensive line in there after Eli, so the kid wouldn't get hit early and maybe get him spooked. So he had him in some good reads. Most of the NFL coaches last night, if they had a young quarterback in, you know what they did the first pass play? Play action. Give him something easy to trick the defense. Typically, play action is a better pass protection. Only put two or three guys out. That's what they did to get him started. He made a couple nice throws like Kyler. Sideline outs, quick outs. Had to make a quick decision. The touchdown, people will be looking at that thinking he made a great throw. Be like, oh, man, he fit that ball in there. Like, that receiver, I mean, that safety should have intercepted that ball. I mean, that ball should have not been thrown to him. And he was eyeballing him the whole time. So, great start by him. Be careful on the touchdown, because if you watch it, when he gets the snap of the ball, his head, they were in cover two. That means split safeties. His head was on the safety and to the right side of the field. The safety should have been wider than the wide receiver, because he was the only receiver to that side of the field. You don't have to worry, because the Jets had their backup secondary in there, mostly their backup defense. He's not an NFL safety. So don't look at that as if, oh, he made a great throw. Those are bad defenders out there. It was a ball that shouldn't have been thrown. Two guys could have picked that ball off. So let's pump our brakes. So like the coach said,
I find that really interesting because the first four passes.
What, did I know football?
No. Oh. That's what you saw there. Because the first four passes were all boom, boom, throw. Boom, like it was read, react.
The first one they threw down the field. That's when they ran the play action with the crosser.
Yep. And
to
then,
get him started.
And then after that it was, and to his credit, he completed them. They were on target. He didn't make any mistakes. But it's what I was talking about before, which is they had schemed it up to where he was going to have, relatively speaking, easy throws. When I was watching this live, I thought exactly what Chris said a lot of people thought. Man, I thought he dropped this in the bucket. I thought this was right exactly where it needed to be. Mm-hmm. I know that watching the game, the game announcers, now they're going to be a little biased because we're in New York and we're hearing the New York announcers. They said
something. Carl Banks.
Carl Banks, our friend. Carl Banks. Well, they said something similar. It wasn't until you came in this morning that pointed out that the safety got turned around and had his back to the play the whole time that I saw what you were saying.
Yeah, if that's during the regular season, Jamal Adams picks that off and he might be making the tackle. One thing as an analyst, you have to be careful, because I've been covering the NFL draft for a long time. What you say about a player in college and in the draft, you have to put a check mark on that when they come into the pros, because they'll be in a different system, different environment, and they might have a skill set that this team is able to work with. And that's what I've been able to do. If I don't think a guy should be drafted as high, I don't use that in analyzing him.
Sure.
So I didn't look at that last night saying, you know something, the Giants should have had Haskins there. Because it's going to be hard for you to evaluate players fairly if you continue to do that. You have to almost have a blank slate. They come into the league, what you saw compared to what they do. Barkley, I didn't see him at Penn State tote the ball 22, 25, 28 times. All the Penn State backs, for the most part, have been bust in the NFL. I thought he'd be good. I didn't think he was going to be an instant superstar. So it's not as if I missed on him. I adjusted. Once he got to the league, I was like, okay, let me adjust this. Okay. Don't hold against them what we saw in college and in the draft. You have to turn the page to be able to evaluate him, because Pat Shurmur is going to try to bring out the best in his ability. And last night, you could see some of the things why he was a first-round pick.
So do the Giants have a quarterback situation now? Daniel Jones looked good. He's had a pretty good camp. Then you have Eli. How are they going to handle the situation moving forward?
Well, I had a Giants fan say to me last night, man, if Daniel Jones keeps out playing Eli this preseason, we do have to be fair to Eli. Eli threw one pass. Eli was in there for one drive. Now, it was a three and out, but it wasn't a three and out because of Eli. They had two ineffective runs. He had one pass, one for 3 yards. Is it on the board that he's the week one starter? I suppose when Daniel Jones, when you're a top 10 pick, it has to be on the board to a degree. But I would be shocked if, with the loyalty they've shown to Eli Manning, if he does not get something of a farewell game. And to me, in their schedule, see, there is a perfect window for him. After week six, they're at New England. That's on a Thursday night. They have 10 days, and then they play Arizona. I would imagine that they're looking, that they would say, if things don't start well, we could, when we are going to insert him, it could be with extra time against a team we don't think is going to be a great team. But I think their plan is for Eli to be the week one starter.
When are they benching him, Nick? What's that bye week in there? Tell me that again.
They play New England on a Thursday.
What week is that?
And so I think what their plan would be, who do you think is going to be the week one?
I totally disagree. You're the only person in the world thinking that.
Thinking what? That Eli's going to start week one?
Eli is definitely going to start week number one.
So we're on the same page.
And, there's a plan for him to take over week number six. The Giants told us Eli played better than anyone saw. Eli has played well in camp. He knows how to get through camp. But to think that the Giants and anyone in the Giants organization is thinking this kid is going to start the first half of the season, we are crazy. Eli Manning is the starter for the Giants, all right? We've been trying to replace Eli for 3 years, and now they desk. Eli should be replaced when a guy's better than him. Right now, Daniel Jones is not better than him, and when he is, I'll call for Eli's job and for Eli to sit down. Until then, it's just a rookie learning the system, played in his first preseason game. Eli is light years better than him. And we will ruin him if we put him behind that offensive line any week before week number eight, all right? Or I don't believe he'll be playing this whole season. So he should be sitting watching Eli. That's the plan I'm sure that the Giants have.
Okay. Well, I mean, the point that I'm making, and I think you're wrong when you say no one is speculating the same thing. That the
no one in the Giants. No one in the Giants. That's what's important. What do the Giants think?
Okay, well, if the Giants don't think it's on the board for him to start at some point in the first half of the year, then you can't draft him sixth overall. If you take a player sixth overall,
that's just your philosophy. They didn't tell us that, Nick.
No, they didn't. The whole league has told us that over the last 10 years.
Let me tell you what the Giants told us. Eli can play more football.
Yes.
That's what they told us. He could play a couple more years. Did they not say that? I'm not making it
no,
up.
No, no, no. They absolutely said that. They also said how they fell in love with Daniel Jones. The point that I just wanted to be clear, because I don't know if it was clear to you, the point I was making, that if the beginning of the season goes poorly, they have a window where you have a mini bye week leading into a bad defense where it would make sense week 7 after you play the Patriots.
I haven't seen anything on film. Hyperbola. I haven't seen anything written that would make me think Eli can be benched in week number 6. I didn't see anything last night that said, oh, Eli's in trouble with his job.
Okay.
All right, let's take a break there. I'm going to call the Giants in the break and see what's really happening here. Back here, first things first, with Coach Eric Mangini. Coach.
What up, my friend?
Good morning.
Good to see you.
Good to have you. Got a lot of football that actually happened last night, so we can talk about.
There was some.
Some actual action. If you didn't get your preseason fix last night, there are 5 more games this weekend, including the Chiefs and reigning MVP Pat Mahomes. Chiefs facing the Bengals. Mahomes expected to play the entire first quarter. Coach, is this the right call by Andy Reid, having Mahomes in there for a whole first quarter?
Well, everybody's philosophy to preseason is a little bit different, and Andy's going to do what he's done over the course of time. And when you look at last year, he played the whole first quarter. I think they punted with a second left in the first quarter, the first preseason game. Mm-hmm. He was 5 for 7. He had 33 yards. He got sacked 1 time. No touchdowns, no interceptions. But he may be looking at this as if he got hurt, he gets hurt with 3 weeks left before the start of the season, as opposed to the third preseason game or playing a guy in the fourth preseason game. And it's good work. And when you look what he did with Alex Smith, Alex played 2 series the year before, but he got about 10 to 12 plays. So this is what Andy does. And this is how he prepares his offense and his quarterback. So, yeah, is it the right decision? Yes, it's the right decision for Andy, the way he approaches things.
And it's the right decision if he's going to be the type of player and the type of leader that you want him to be. If people, I just don't know how people want players to develop. I don't know how they expect them to get him any better. Don't nobody want to practice anymore. We're not playing in pads anymore. And don't nobody want to play in the preseason anymore. So how are you supposed to get the best out of the great when the grape goes through pressing to be able to make it into wine? Like, so to me, I'm just confused. People want to see a great product, but they don't want to see the process. All right? And this is the process that it takes to become a football player. Getting people ready. So now we're getting ready to shortcut this. We're getting ready to put the process of being an NFL player into a microwave. We're getting ready to zip it. We're going to do it in 2 minutes, Coach.
Yeah.
No, I don't have no problem with a coach playing a guy, and I wouldn't have a problem because Andy Reid, his experience in this league, he would have an explanation of why he's not playing. But the one thing Dennis Green used to always point out to me, Chris, them offensive linemen just as important as you. And you know something, Chris? When they hear your voice in the huddle, you know something? They know it's real. So it's not fair to them. Send them out there. I'm going to make them play a quarter. And then you sitting over there with a hat, you and Moss over there laughing, chucking it up. Kill. Because it really cuts into your leadership. Because if you're with us and you're leading us, we want you leading all the time. So even sometime when Coach Green would give me the option, Chris, it's on you how much you want to play. I want you to go out there with the first unit for the first series. It's on you how much you want to play. And I used to always tell my guys, I'm with you, man. Moss, if you out here, I'm with you. Backup quarterback, if it's Brad Johnson, and we got a quarterback competition, I'm staying with both the quarterbacks so that neither one of them have an advantage. It's a part of being an elite player. It's a part of being a leader. And it's a part of the accountability that that locker room is calling for because they don't want to be out there sweating and you over on the sideline. And then, you know, so what happens? Then one of your frontline guys get hurt. And then what do you tell them? Because you're not out there. Just be consistent. Andy Reid, he knows how to develop players. And he knows how to develop quarterbacks compared to some other guys who get credit for developing quarterbacks and really have not done it, Coach.
And things have changed so dramatically over the course of the years. It used to be 2-a-days for 2 weeks. the morning was full pads, the afternoon was uppers, and it was back to back, and there was live tackle. There was a lot of things going on to get guys ready for what they were going to see in an intense regular season. And Chris makes a good point. Things have changed, and there's complaints about practicing against other teams. I don't want to practice against another team, but I also don't want to play in the preseason game, but I want to perform at a high level. And I do agree, too, that when you put out a bunch of your frontline guys, to hold someone back and say, okay, well, he's more valuable than you, and he's more valuable than you, and that can create some tension in the locker room. And the preseason is time for getting right. I remember we played the Bengals in New England, and the starters went out and got crushed. We were getting crushed. And Bill was so angry at the lack of intensity from our guys that he pulled all the starters in the first quarter. They didn't play till the second half. We brought them out in the third quarter, and they played and mm-hmm. started the third quarter. And he said, look, you want to play like a bunch of backups? Then you're gonna be in when the backups are in.
All right, let's get back to Patrick Mahomes here. Maybe not from what you saw last night or from what you think you might see this Saturday, but talk to me about this season and what you think you're going to get out of Patrick Mahomes. Well, another MVP season?
Well, I mean, I think that he obviously has MVP talent. I think the Chiefs would hope he does not have to have the type of numbers he had last year. Chris brings it up all the time, and I think this is a telling stat. The 12 highest scoring offenses in NFL history all have one thing in common. None of them won the Super Bowl. A lot of that's because they were forced into scoring those points. That might sound odd. You might say, don't you always want to score as many points as possible? But you don't. Sometimes you would like to have 28 going into the fourth quarter. The other team's got 13, and you're just trying to play to the end of the clock.
Yeah,
rather
one of the things we did, we broke the NFL record. Yeah, we were lightning quick scores. Most of the scores we had less than 7 plays. But it also put our defense back out there, who was also one of the worst all time. So that's what he's talking about when you're forced to score because you got a defense can't stop a nosebleed, and that's what Kansas City has.
Right. So last year in their 5 losses over the course of the entire season, including the playoffs, aside from the Seattle game, every single one of those losses, Mahomes orchestrated some type of fourth quarter comeback to either tie the game or take the lead, and then the defense obviously then gave it right back. The Chiefs would like this year for Mahomes to have the same efficiency numbers, cut down on some of the turnovers. His turnover numbers weren't terrible, but he also had some luck in that regard. I think he had the second most interceptable balls mm-hmm. that were not intercepted of anyone in football. So
balls that touched the opposition hand.
Yeah, like, 10 of them that ended up not being picked off.
Yes.
Which was the second most in football. But what they'd really like is for the defense to get some short fields, the defense to get some stops, and the Chiefs at 27 points be able to take their foot off the gas instead of saying, man,
no,
we better get this thing
45
up to,
every time
right,
out.
We better get this thing up to 40 or else we could lose late in games as they did against the Chargers, they did against the Patriots, twice as they did against the Rams.
I just don't know what major moves they've made defensively that makes you think that this defense is going to be significantly better than the defense that we saw last year. And I know the answer is always to fire the defensive coordinator, even if a defensive lineman jumps off sides and gives away the game. Of course, that's the answer. But what, from your perspective, what dramatic changes have they made to make you think that this story is going to be different than the story they wrote last year?
Okay, so I want to be clear. I've not said in any capacity I think the Chiefs are going to have some great defense. I'm saying what they hope to have is a better defense. Now, I do think Tyrann Mathieu is a very good player, and I think that's a good addition. I love Eric Berry, but Eric Berry was not able to play last year in any real capacity. He hadn't recovered from that Achilles injury, and right now he's still out of the league. Now, they brought in Frank Clark, but they lose D. Ford, the guy who jumped off sides, and Justin Houston. They obviously believe Frank Clark's
pretty significant pass rusher.
Absolutely significant pass rusher.
Yeah. He's not as good as 2 players.
Correct.
And I would say to D. Ford, Frank is a wash.
And even if Frank's a little bit better than D. Ford plus Justin Houston compared, because those are the guys walking out the door. But I do think the defensive coordinator change will be a good one. I know you like Bob Sutton. I know you have a relationship with Bob Sutton. I think the Chiefs just having something new there because Bob's what? Say?
Just why? I mean, like, just because it's a new guy?
I think sometimes a new voice when you've been that bad and when your season ends the way it did and when Bob Sutton, it felt like his time had run its course in Kansas City, an infusion of new blood will be a good one. An infusion of a defensive coordinator won the Super Bowl with the Giants with a fearsome front four. I think that could be a positive for the Chiefs. I think the Chiefs would have been foolish to run it back with the same D coordinator because they weren't going to be able to make major personnel overhauls on the defensive side.
How many different types of blood are there, Nick?
There's four different types?
Right. But if you get the wrong type, you'll have a heart attack and die, right?
Correct.
Oh, okay, no problem. We'll see.
Explain, I don't know.
Because you said a new transfusion.
Okay. Oh, a new blood in there.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, their defense not going to be worse than it was last year. There's no chance that even it's going to be worse than it was last year. And so I think that would be the reason for optimism.
Well, there's always a chance.
I'd let you keep going if it was good.
All right, let's get back to Kyler Murray.
If
he was nervous in his debut last night, he hit it pretty well. He had an efficient night. He working out of the shotgun the whole time, went 6 of 7, 44 yards in 10 plays. His night was done after that. After getting the first preseason game out of the way, Kyler said it was a dream come true to play last night.
I think, you know, it's natural as rookies just to, you know, kind of have expectations, you know, how is he going to be, you know, overthinking stuff like that. But for me, I was just going out there being myself, like always, you know, trusting my abilities, trust what coach calls, and just trying to go out there and execute what he calls. So it was fun.
Coach, first impressions of Kyler Murray from what you saw?
Well, when I watched him in college, I was always impressed by his poise in the pocket for a guy that has the ability to run like he does and to make plays like he does. I always felt like he gave the pocket plenty of time to unfold, and the receivers a chance to go through their route and him a chance to go through his progression. And that's hard to do when you have that other skill set that you can easily go to. So I like that, and I thought we saw that last night. He hit a range of throws. He seemed poised. The mechanics were good overall. All those things are really positive. What I was concerned about is there was one play where he had to break out of the pocket, and that's great. But then he also got sacked. So in that one drive, he almost got sacked and then did get sacked. So that's an indication of what he's going to be facing game in and game out, drive in and drive out, which is hard.
Well, are those two plays, was that a Kyler issue or an offensive line issue in your mind?
Well, the sack looked like a team meeting back at him. Like, it looked like nobody got their block. But the one that he got away from, it shows you, you know, the problems he's going to create for defenses if they don't have contain on the outside.
One thing we need to realize, and you could hear it in his interviews, Kyler plays high school football in the state of Texas. And as much as I love Ohio, much as I love Florida, nothing bigger than high school football in Texas. So on that stage, there were people that said his high school career, he was the best player in the history of high school football in the state of Texas. That would have to be a pretty good football player.
I'm a great football player.
I mean, he had to be. Then he goes to Oklahoma, ends up winning the Heisman Trophy after sitting there. Did I say he was drafted Major League Baseball? Mm-hmm. So to think he would be nervous in an interview or playing in a preseason game, no. I mean, he's a spectacular talent that has exceeded at every single level. My only question mark with him is, will they have the system around him? This air raid, I know what I saw in college. I know that won't work in the pros, but I'm giving it a chance. And last night, you could see them. They've tinkered with it to make it more pro-ready. So now with that offensive line that's been bad for a long time, David Johnson, the running back, who's been inconsistent, and the receiving corps led by Larry Fitzgerald, if these guys play, this kid's going to have a chance. But if they don't, if that air raid, if they don't have the proper protection, if they don't have those things, it's going to be difficult. But to think that he would struggle, let's not forget who this kid is. He might be the best high school player that's ever played in the state of Texas. We saw him win the Heisman Trophy. And if it's anything that Heisman Trophy winners now might be able to play in the NFL, Baker Mayfield maybe gave us a little glimpse of what we're going to see with Kyler. And Kyler has an advantage than Baker. They named him the starter from day number one. And that gives him a huge advantage into his rookie season compared to what Baker was dealing with last year, Nick.
And it's why all these reps are so important for him, because I was in Texas when he was in high school football, and I mean it was like Paul Bunyan, the legendary stories, and then you'd see the clips, someone had video from the stands of what he was doing. But then he went to Texas A&M first, and he was going to play as a true freshman, ended up barely playing at all his freshman season. Sophomore year, transfers. Mm-hmm. So he doesn't get any game action. Right. His junior year, he's behind Baker Mayfield at Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. So he gets essentially no action. So since that great high school career, there's only been one season he's played a ton of live bullet football, and that was last year when he set all the records winning the Heisman Trophy. So he doesn't have as much game experience as you would expect for a number one overall pick. And so to see him yesterday in that first play, first play in an NFL game, albeit a preseason game, he's backed up inside his own 5-yard line. Throws that quick out to the sideline, mm-hmm. gets him some breathing room. Like,
yeah.
he was totally poised in that moment, which to me was really impressive. And, yes, there were some easy throws for him, but he also had the read option where they went to the left. He could have run with
yeah.
it, and he throws
yeah,
almost
an RPO.
And it was almost a lateral to
yep.
Larry Fitzgerald.
They run the bubble screen. They fake the dive or the zone mm-hmm. to the strong side. If it's not there, he pulls it. He can run it, or he can throw it to
and
the swing.
And he throws it, and maybe in a regular season game, he runs with it, but he doesn't want to mm-hmm. take the hit in the preseason
Absolutely.
Game. I don't think there's much you can critique and say he's screwed up in this game. And I think the escapability is going to matter, because even if Arizona has a better offensive line than it did last year, they're not going to have a very good offensive line this year. They haven't put the resources into it yet.
And with all the success that he's had in high school and in college, And I don't know him. I didn't get a chance to interview him during the draft process. But coming off in the interview, there seems to be a humbleness, a sincerity to him, just a different type of poise for a young guy than some other young guys that we'll probably talk about who have none of that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's going to go a long way. When you're thrust into a position like this, to be able to handle it with some grace and poise, that not only helps from a fan perspective, but from your teammates' perspective.
No doubt.
Because you look at this guy and you say, okay, he is ready. Because
we do get nervous.
Yeah.
And it's nice to see
nervous.
You get nervous.
And to see him stand up there and take the good and the bad and handle it gracefully, as a vet, you look and think, okay, we're going to be okay with this guy.
And, Nick, your biggest concern since he was drafted obviously was his size. I know it was a short sample size, but did it put you at ease in any way just from what you saw last night?
You didn't see it hurt him yesterday. I didn't see one play where I'm like, man, if he was 6'3", it would have been a better play. Now, we'll see over the course of the season. We'll see once he starts taking punishment. We'll see if balls start getting batted down, which is always, even if it's unfair, the concern with short quarterbacks.
Right, and that's more Urban Legend. Last
yep.
year in college, only had 5 passes batted down. Daniel Jones, 7 inches taller than him, had 12 batted down. So,
Nick, I was waiting for you to comment on Jenna's short sample size.
Oh, yeah.
Where was the drum roll on
no
that?
No one gets my puns.
Yeah, we need the...
I just now got it.
Yeah,
as
it
opposed
is.
To small sample size, short sample yeah. size. Well done, Jenna.
I got it, Jenna.
All right, we'll get to Deshaun Watson's new weapon in just a second, but first, a couple of plays from preseason last night, and that was a painful one.
Remember I told you guys the preseason is not about sit back and be conservative, teams blitz more? Mm-hmm. Here you go, Ravens, backed up, blitzing, line protection misses it, quarterback misses the hot, drops the ball,
man,
gets a whole
Gardner
face.
Gardner Minshew wasn't getting hit like that at Washington State last year.
Cleveland taking on Washington. Baker Mayfield throwing the 24-yard strike to Rashard Higgins for the touchdown on the opening drive.
Rashard Higgins, you don't hear much about him, but he's going to be the third or fourth wide receiver for Cleveland. If he can have a big year, take some pressure off of Jarvis Landry, take some pressure off their tight end, take some pressure off OBJ. They got a nice wide receiving core.
Absolutely. And Rashard Higgins might be ahead of Antonio Callaway as we sit here today.
Patriots, Lions, N'Keal Harry making the right adjustment, hauls in a 25-yard catch right there.
He got dinged in this game, though, which is unfortunate for a wide receiving core that was already bereft of a lot of high-level talent. The rare first-round pick by Bill Belichick at that position. That's a good play.
They still need some help on the outside. They need a speed guy. Josh Gordon, maybe getting reinstated soon. He might be that guy. Rodgers got a thing for him. They'd like to be able to help the kid out who's really struggled in the last 5 years.
So yesterday the Texans acquired Duke Johnson in a trade with the Browns for a conditional pick. Johnson is one of the best pass-catching running backs around since entering the league back in 2015. He has the third most receptions among all NFL running backs, which should be a big help to Deshaun Watson. All right, see, just how good can this Texans offense be?
They have the potential to be really good, but it's like some teams, like my Minnesota Vikings, don't have a tremendous amount of resources on their offensive line, so it's not a matter of scheme. If I can't block the guy in front of me, if I can't win my individual battles, then it's going to prevent my team from being one of the better offenses. Now, they're talented. They got one of the better quarterbacks, got one of the better wide receivers. But from a scheme standpoint, I wonder, because now you get Duke Johnson. Duke Johnson's 5'8".
Yep.
If I get a running back like that in the game If they're playing against New England, and New England got two linebackers, Hightower, 250, 255. If they the other linebacker they got from Jamie Collins, if he's the middle linebacker, I mean, they got two linebackers that weigh 500 pounds. So when you guard a guy like him, you know what you do if they bring him in the game?
They hit him.
You blitz him. No, you blitz, and you make him have to stay in for protection. And then how good is he? Like, if you can spread him out and everything, if you tell me they got a great offensive line where everyone can individual block, yeah, he would really help. Now, I'm glad he got out of Cleveland, because with Kareem Hunt being there, there was not a place for him. So I am happy for that. But is he the piece that's going to get them over? I'd much rather them had gotten an offensive lineman or a tight end. That would have helped, because it helps with protection, which is the weakness of this offense. So I still have a number of questions, Jenna, as far as how the Texans move forward to help out Deshaun and Nuke.
And it should be noted that in last night's game, Nick Martin, who might be their best offensive lineman, their center, carted off. And so now maybe he carted off with an injury and come back from, but we don't have a diagnosis on
it's
that
It's never
yet.
Good when you get carted off, because the guys want to try to walk off at least.
Absolutely.
So they are forced to get on that cart, so it's a significant injury.
So when you heard the Texans made a trade for a player for a draft pick, I think most Texans fans were like, Trent Williams, tell me it's Trent Williams. They desperately – they have the money. They had second most cap space of anyone. It wasn't. Now, Duke Johnson, I think, is better than Lamar Miller. I think Lamar Miller, I was in Houston when they signed him. They had high hopes for it. He had been used somewhat sparingly in Miami, but had shown some good ability. Since he's been with Houston, he has been the definition of a replacement-level NFL running back. Just under 1,000 yards per season despite playing full-time. 4 touchdowns per season. Just under 4 yards per carry. Like, this is – he's been a guy. Now, a reliable guy, but just a guy. So that does help him. And, man, they've got talent on both sides of the ball. Deshaun's one of the most exciting young quarterbacks in football and gets overlooked when we talk about the best young quarterbacks in the league. DeAndre has an argument that he was, and I think he made this point yesterday, that he was as productive as any wide receiver could have been given who has been throwing him the ball over this first portion of his career. Will Fuller, when he's been healthy, has been an elite deep threat with Deshaun Watson. We know the talent on defense. Clowney's not there right now, but Clowney's going to show up eventually. J.J. Watt, who's dealing with a slight injury right now, but Watt, when healthy, is great. We know how Whitney Mercilus was a guy who once had 22 sacks in the college season, has been good at getting after the passer in the NFL. We know the type of talent they have on the team. I have major questions about the head coach and about his play calling, about the efficiency of the offense. And that offensive line, one tackle's Shontrell Henderson, a 7th-round pick whose best football, I think, was in high school in Florida. And
he's number one recruit.
Right, number one recruit, and then never ended up being that player in college or the NFL. Their tackle is Matt Khalil, who's another guy who came into the league with high hopes and has always bounced around the league for a reason, even though he's got the frame of a left tackle. They just lost their center. Deshaun was sacked more than any quarterback in football last year, and they didn't address the offensive line in any real capacity. They drafted a tackle in the first round, but there's a reason he's not starting for him right now. He was a small school guy that they got. The Eagles jumped ahead of them to get the tackle they really wanted, so they had to settle on Titus Howard. So, like, what are they? Are they going to be able to protect Deshaun, and are any of their running backs going to be able to have any holes to run through? If the offensive line overachieves, they could win the division. They could be a very dangerous team because of the talent. But for the second straight year, it's an offensive line question in Houston.
Yeah, and it's the question mark that we really don't have answers for. And you'd like to be an expert. You'd like to be able to say, you know something? I could see them working to solve this problem. But no quarterback in the NFL has gotten sacked more than Deshaun Watson since 2006. Yeah, with John Kitna. John Kitna, 2006. So for me, I would have been excited was, oh, they traded for something where they're really, really weak. Now, I'm not like Nick. I know he's not a better runner than Lamar running between the tackles because Duke is really small. He wasn't a great runner in college. Both him and Lamar both went to University of Miami. I watched their whole career. Now, as a pass catcher, out of the backfield, he is better than that Lamar. Lamar, the problem is the offensive line is bad and they paid him a significant amount of money. So the expectations, he's never been able to meet them.
Welcome back. Time for stories to start your morning. Last night, Baker Mayfield gave us a glimpse into what an explosive offense this Browns team could be. Baker was 5 of 6, 77 yards, one touchdown pass to Rashard Higgins. That was without Jarvis Landry and Odell Beckham. See, what impressed you about Baker last night?
Oh, that throw right there.
Yeah.
It's over the safety in front of the other safety. That was a pinpoint throw. But I like Baker, man. Baker's going to be a guy who played with a lot of energy and everything. I like the fact that didn't have his two best receivers. Still seemed very, very comfortable. Now, that's a force multiplier. That's what coach is talking about. But two best guys ain't there. We still can move the ball down the field. So I like the relationship with him and Freddie Kitchens building on that. Baker Mayfield's a special quarterback.
And that offense picked up right where it left off at the end of last year. They went no huddle. They were crisp. They were on time. And that was, he had some easy throws early. That was a tough throw, and he fit
it. I think that's
there.
One of the themes this year. They're going to try to be a little more up-tempo.
Yep.
The other side of this game, Dwayne Haskins had a bit of an up-and-down debut, went 8 of 14 for 117 passing yards. Through two interceptions, though, he was also sacked twice. Nick, what did you take away from Haskins' first performance?
I think of the young quarterbacks yesterday, if we were to pick the five best throws of the night from any of them, the five worst throws of the night from any of them, Haskins might have two on each list. He had the two interceptions. He also made a couple really difficult throws that he fit in there just right. I thought he didn't have a bunch of easy throws, and he was constantly under duress. Those mistakes, though, were bad mistakes.
But, Nick, you put a good point earlier. You said on NFL.com, right?
You can watch every throw from all the young quarterbacks.
And in doing that, you were like, wow, if I looked at just the stats, man, it would look like he had a bad night. But he really made some quality throws. He's got a big-time arm. He made a miscalculation. The first one, running back, one-on-one on a linebacker. He underthrew him coming out of the backfield. Just got to put a little more air on it, short yardage situation, and trying to throw a seam route. He couldn't step into the throw enough, so he got his arm, was down a little bit. The ball sailed. Greedy Williams intercepts. He gets a gift on the outside. So those are things that are correctable. A great point by you, though. That's nice. You and the staff, y'all works at this stuff. Okay.
If you didn't get your preseason fix last night, there are five more games this weekend, including the Chiefs and reigning MVP Pat Mahomes. Chiefs facing the Bengals. Mahomes expected to play the entire first quarter. You think that's the right call by Andy Reid, CC?
Absolutely. If you want to learn how to develop your quarterback, go ask Andy Reid. Andy Reid has developed so many different quarterbacks and not just talented ones. He's developed some good backup quarterbacks, man. And he's been able to do this for a long time. To me, you have to be careful because not only are you, as a football world, we've gotten away from the process. We want to see great players. But you know what? We're not consumed with the process. The players don't even like the process. That's why the union fought for less practice times, less padded practice. So the offseason is shorter. Training camp is shorter and less physical. And in the preseason, we know what the preseason has become. But it will always be a huge stepping stone in trying to develop players and when you're trying to develop leaders. Because it's hard to tell your leader, all right, you're too good for this. But the other guys, I can send them out there,
right.
That being your brothers, your offensive linemen, that center, he wants Patty Mahomes' hands up under his behind as long as he's in there. Because, you know, it makes you think that, you know something, the coach values me just as much as he values them. So for me, I would always try to make it a point that as long as our frontline guys was in there, and Denny Green a lot of times gave me the option of calling it, and I used to tell Moss, bro, if you in here, man, I'm going to be in there with you, even though I didn't want to be in there. At training camp, your legs is tired. I'd much rather be sitting on the sideline, you know, horsing around a little bit. But it's important that everyone feels like, because on the surface, we know people aren't equal. But if you're treated equal, it's a respect factor, and NFL players really, really love that. They really enjoy that.
Let me just follow up on that real quick. So Andy Reid's had so much success developing quarterbacks, getting the most out of quarterbacks, getting the most out of offenses. Are you surprised more coaches then don't say, well, Andy Reid, like Adam Gase, for example, takes over with the Jets. Mm-hmm. Mahomes doesn't have a ton of experience. Darnold has even less. Darnold had one drive. It was a good drive. All right, you're done for the night. Are you surprised more teams don't then say, well, listen, if Patrick Mahomes, league MVP as a young quarterback, can play a whole quarter in the first preseason game, our guys can too?
I don't think coaches necessarily understand, like, what are the things the benefits and the negatives if you decide to sit a guy. I do believe coaches are into developing them, but they're into developing them their way. I can live with a coach going with a second-year quarterback saying, you know something, he's going to play a series. Sam Darnold. I'm fine with that because they've gotten hundreds and hundreds of snaps in training camp. And what were the other frontline players doing? Did they play one series?
Right.
Because then you help Sam out with his leadership. He's in there when the guys are in there. There is no one perfect way to do it. If we had come on the show and Patty Mahomes was not playing, and Jenna said, Chris, do you have a problem with Patty Mahomes playing? And I'd be like, no, because this guy knows how to develop quarterbacks, and I believe in what he's seeing, and it either could be an injury behind the scene, or you know something? They're going to be blitzing a lot. I don't have the line to be able to protect him. I'm going to sit him out because typically you're only going to play three of the four preseason games, and you're only going to play maybe one game in total in those three of four games that you participate in.
Well, he did wonders developing Patty Mahomes, who had an MVP season. You think he can repeat that this year?
I think he can, and we were discussing this earlier. The Chiefs would hope that he doesn't have to. They would hope that the defense can hold a little bit more. It might be mostly hope. I mean, just yesterday, they signed Mo Claiborne because they are that bereft of talent at the cornerback position. Now, I know the sixth overall pick for Dallas years ago. He's never lived up to it. He's facing a suspension. They're still like, come on in. We need the help. The Chiefs improved at safety, bringing in Tyrann Mathieu. They think they improved at pass rusher by adding Frank Clark and by bringing in Steve Spagnuolo as the D coordinator. But they got the worst corners in football, and that killed them last year. How'd they lose to the Patriots? Yes, D Ford lined up offsides, but third and 10, third and 10, third and 10. Three in a row in overtime with Chris Carter next to me and Tony Romo on TV saying, here's where they're going with the ball, here's where they're going with the ball, here's where they're going with the ball, and the Chiefs just couldn't stop it. I don't know that they've gotten better in that regard. And so they would like Mahomes.
They do have a new face.
They got Steve Spagnuolo as their D coordinator. Sutton's out.
He's a competent coordinator.
And so they and I think they hope that I feel like they've made change almost because they felt they had to change something. They knew they weren't going to be able to totally revamp the personnel. And in the draft, they thought Tyreek was maybe going to miss the year, maybe be cut. Maybe we didn't know how that was going to go. So they used their first draft pick on a wide receiver, Mecole Hardman, Tyreek Hill-ish player. So they weren't even able to get the influx of talent in the draft on defense the way they had hoped. So, yeah, Mahomes probably going to have to be really special again.
He's going to have to be special. Nick makes a good point as far as when you're developing quarterbacks, because there's two stories in the NFL the last 15 years. Do we want Patty Mahomes to be Tom Brady, or do we want him to be Aaron Rodgers? And Nick is saying, please, I mean, I'll take one Super Bowl if they got him, but can you give me a variety of ways we can win? Can Patty Mahomes one day go out and throw the ball 28 times and us grind it out, our defense is halfway decent? Right. So that's what Nick is saying. Hey, man. Help out my defense. This will help out the star quarterback. We know Patty Mahomes is going to give us a couple no looks. We know he's going to be slinging the ball. Their offensive talent, man, is second to none in the NFL. But from a defensive standpoint, if it's about championships, that defense has got to get better. And it's going to be a lot of eyes on Steve Spagnuolo, seeing if he can change the results basically with the same ingredients. And that becomes very, very difficult in this league. But Patty Mahomes will get better. It will be hard for him to approach that. He has the best tight end. He got the best speed receiver returner in Tyreek Hill. Let's start with that. And that if you're going to start your meal with that, I think you're going to be able to cook up something, even yourself, Jenna.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter, Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.